Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2002. A Fatal Influence.
Hello. I've just finished watching the television news showing the latest round of bloodletting between Jews and Palestinians in the Middle East. It's certainly good to see that the Palestinians finally have learned how to improve the kill ratio. For a long time, it seemed that for every Jew killed by a Palestinian, the Jews killed 100 or so Palestinians. Things are a bit better now. But the bloodletting is not the most interesting aspect of the news about the Middle East. The most interesting aspect is the response of the politicians over here and of the media over here. All of us, of course, view the world through our own prejudices. Despite my prejudices, though, when I watch the news, I do try to imagine how other people with different prejudices are reacting to what I'm seeing. I see George Bush and the other politicians over here desperately sucking up to the Jews by demanding that Yasser Arafat stop the violence, that Yasser Arafat call off his terrorists. Whether it is a Palestinian blowing himself up at an Israeli military checkpoint and taking three Jews with him, or one of Ariel Sharon's murder squads summarily shooting a group of young Palestinian men they have rounded up in Ramallah, the Bush crowd over here calls on Yasser Arafat to stop the violence. Now, on aesthetic grounds alone, I could never be an Arafat booster. He's about as aesthetically appealing as Ariel Sharon. But I ask myself, whenever I see George Bush with that little smirk on his face, blaming every act of violence in occupied Palestine on the Palestinians and never on the Jewish occupiers, whenever I hear him repeat his same old claim that Arafat isn't doing enough to stop the violence while Jewish soldiers are shooting more Palestinian children, I ask myself, doesn't Bush's performance look as grotesque to other viewers as it does to me? Doesn't it make other viewers squirm in embarrassment when they see this pathetic, smirking liar sucking up to the Jews and are reminded that he's the President of the United States? I've heard people who still are enamored of the democratic system of government we have in the United States make excuses for the behavior of Bush and the other politicians. They have to behave that way, I've been told. It's the media bias. They couldn't get elected if they didn't pretend to be pro-Israel. And when I hear that, all I can think is that no honorable man has to behave that way. No real American has to behave that way. No decent man has to stand for public office under the present system. George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest got into politics knowing ahead of time that if elected, they would have to play by Jewish rules. Well, of course, Mr. Bush's apologists are right about the media bias. While Yasser Arafat was huddled in his office in Ramallah last week without water or electricity or food, surrounded by Israeli tanks, and Jewish soldiers were trying to shoot their way in, American reporters managed to get Arafat on the telephone, and what they asked him was, "Mr. Arafat, why don't you stop the violence?" Because of Jewish media bias, most Americans see only one side of the violence. When a Palestinian woman blows herself up in a Jewish restaurant and kills a dozen or so Jews, it's all over television here, and we get to hear Mr. Bush once again blaming the violence on Arafat. When the Jews round up Palestinians on the streets of Ramallah, handcuff them, march them around a corner out of sight, and shoot them, Americans never hear about it. In Europe, at least, the public is getting a somewhat more balanced picture. I have on my desk now a stack of news reports from European newspapers from earlier this week. On top of the stack is a news report from this Sunday's issue of The Observer, a major London newspaper. It's headed, "Without Mercy, Israelis Execute Arafat's Guards." The report itself is a first-hand account by Peter Beaumont, The Observer's foreign affairs editor in Ramallah, as he goes into an office building near Arafat's headquarters and views the corpses of a group of Palestinian policemen who have been rounded up by Sharon's soldiers, disarmed, made to kneel in a hallway, and then shot to death. These aren't terrorists. They are Palestinian policemen who have been rounded up by the Jews and murdered in cold blood. Beaumont describes the condition of the corpses in detail. He notes that the locations of the blood spatters on the walls show that the victims were shot while they were kneeling. After the Jews mowed down the policemen with assault rifles at point-blank range, a Jew shot each one in the head to finish him off. It's disgusting. But what's even more disgusting is the fact that most Americans never have a chance to see this news because the media over here either suppress it or downplay it. Since Ariel Sharon became Israel's prime minister, have you ever heard an American reporter or an American politician ask him why he doesn't stop the violence? Have you ever heard an American reporter ask him about his murderous activities as a war criminal before becoming prime minister? Have you ever heard an American reporter ask him about the recent assassinations of the principal witnesses who might be called to testify against him in a war crimes trial? These assassinations, almost certainly carried out on Sharon's orders by the Mossad, Israel's main organ of state terrorism, have been big news in Europe, but in the United States, they have gone virtually unreported. Well, no one has talked more about the need to end the Jewish control of our mass media than I have. But again, I say, Jewish control of our media is no excuse for people like George Bush. Jewish control of our electoral system is no excuse for any politician to behave the way virtually all of ours do. There are several ways one can look at our problems, and as I said at the beginning, I try to look at them in every way. One could say that everything is the fault of white American men. We used to run this country. If the Jews have taken over our mass media, it's because we let them do it. If we have a bunch of lying crooks in Washington who ought to be hanged, it's because we let the system become what it is today. So we could blame ourselves instead of the politicians or the Jewish media. We also could blame the changed social and economic environment in America for softening us up to the point that we let the Jews and the politicians get away with what they're doing. We certainly do need to toughen ourselves up. We do need to discipline ourselves better, both individually and collectively. We do need to be more vigilant. We do need to have a redesigned social and economic environment that keeps us tough and disciplined. We need to have values oriented toward strength and fitness and progress and survival instead of toward comfort and luxury. And when we regain control of our situation, we do need to hang a great many politicians. Well, it's good to think about all of these things. It's good to look at our problems from every viewpoint. One element that we encounter over and over, whether we look at media bias or at the crookedness of our politicians or at our own softness and decadence, is the role of the Jews. This role is pretty evident in the problem of media bias, although I still encounter people, mostly conservatives, who tell me that Jewish control of the media isn't a problem. They say to me, what difference does it make that Jews are represented disproportionately in the mass media? They're good businessmen. The mass media are big business. It wouldn't be any different if Lutherans or atheists owned the media. That, I believe, can properly be called willful ignorance. I encounter many more people who want to make a distinction between the media Jews and Zionist Jews on the one hand, and all the rest of the Jews, that is, non-Zionist Jews and non-media Jews on the other hand. The media Jews, everyone agrees, are a sleazy bunch. And the Zionist Jews are not to be trusted because they are loyal to Israel, not to America. But those who aren't Zionists are just as trustworthy as non-Jews, I have been told. Perhaps the ignorance of many of these people is not willful, but it is ignorance nevertheless. The truth of the matter is that our present misfortune is not just media Jews or Zionist Jews, but Jews, all of them. Let me explain to you something that I've talked about in the past, but that needs reiteration because many people just didn't get it. It's not terribly complicated, but it's quite at odds with the modern American way of viewing things. All of us white Americans, or our ancestors at some time during the past 400 years, came here from Europe, where we spent many thousands of years in isolation, developing into what we are. We developed as a race. We developed collectively. We not only developed our coloration and our facial features and other characteristics that distinguish us as a race, we also developed a general pattern of thinking and of behaving. We developed a way of living and of surviving as a race. We encountered other races on the southern and eastern borders of our area of development, but for the most part, we developed on our own. And whether our ancestors for the last 1,000 years or so were in Scotland or Latvia or Ukraine, we developed similarly. There was a lot less difference between our ancestors in Ireland and those in Greece or Poland than between all of us and any of the non-European races. And as I said, the characteristics that distinguished us as Europeans were psychological as well as physical. We had our own way of looking at the world and relating to the world, and other races had theirs. The fact that some racial differences are invisible makes things a little tricky. It's easy for us to look at a black and understand that he and we belong to different races. When we look at a Jew, the difference is not as apparent, but it is just as real. One difference between us and the Jews is that they have a far stronger collective consciousness, a far stronger consciousness of who they are and how they differ from us than we do. We can spend a lot of time talking about how much of this difference in collective consciousness is genetic and how much is the result of cultural conditioning. But the essential thing for now is that the difference is real and it's very important. And there are other important differences. Until about 2,000 years ago, we didn't have to worry about these differences because we had no contact with the Jews for all practical purposes. In fact, it's been only during about the past 200 years that we've had much interaction with them. They followed the Roman legions into Gaul and Germany and other parts of Europe to sell trinkets and to buy prisoners of war as slaves. But during the Middle Ages, they were kept pretty much confined to ghettos. Even so, they caused enough problems that they were expelled en masse from every country in Europe at one time or another. But from about the time of the Napoleonic Wars, they really began infiltrating our society and having a major influence. When the barriers came down, the Jews saw a whole new world opened up to them. But they saw that world with their eyes, and of course, it was not their type of world. It was our world, our society, which we had created to suit our own nature. And it was quite different from the sort of world that would suit them. And so they set about remaking our world to suit themselves. And the result of that endeavor on their part is what we see all around us today. Like every other race, we have our weaknesses, our flaws, which we tried to cope with as best we could when we had the advantage of isolation. That is, when we could deal with our own problems in our own ways. When the Jews came into our society, they displayed an uncanny knack for sniffing out our weaknesses and exploiting them. What I'll say now is, like many other things I say, an oversimplification. But it is my way of getting at the truth. When the Jews surveyed our world and made their plans for changing it to suit themselves, they had two goals. First, to remake our society so that it would be more agreeable to them. And second, to disable us so that we would not be able to defend ourselves. With these two goals in mind, they made a beeline for our mass media. It's not just happenstance that they set about monopolizing our mass media instead of, say, our railroads or our steel industry. They knew exactly what they were doing. And it wasn't just the media Jews. While some of them were elbowing the Gentiles out of the way and consolidating their stranglehold on Hollywood, others were quietly taking over whole departments at our universities, building up their numbers in various professional societies, infiltrating themselves into the management of labor unions, working their way into positions of influence in our political parties, organizing so-called interfaith groups and persuading Christian leaders to enter into a one-way dialogue with them, setting themselves up as cultural arbiters, as experts on our art and our music and our literature. And none of this was done blindly or simply as a matter of chance. They worked together like the various units of an invading army. As I said a moment ago, I'm oversimplifying, but I'm happy to refer you to places where you can dig out a lot of the details for yourselves. I'll mention now just two books that are available from the sponsor of this broadcast, National Vanguard Books. One is You Gentiles by the Jewish publicist Maurice Samuel. The other is Bolshevism from Moses to Lenin by the German playwright and publisher Dietrich Eckert. Both books were written back in the 1920s, and both approach the Jewish problem in a fairly comprehensive way, but from opposite sides of the conflict. If you read them, I think you'll find them enlightening, and these two books will lead you to others. I told you that the Jews have two goals. They're not just taking over our society and remaking it to suit themselves. They're also working to cripple us morally so that we can't fight back. That's why you see them doing many things in America that they aren't doing because they like those things for themselves, but because those things weaken us. Their promotion of feminism, for example. Feminism certainly isn't something they want for themselves. It's contrary to their whole tradition. And their position in favor of open borders for America certainly isn't something they favor for Israel. Well, an understanding of what the Jews have done and are doing to our society and why they're doing it isn't something I expect everyone to develop the first time they hear about these things. That's why I talk about them over and over again and go at them from so many different angles. This understanding is important. It's a matter of survival or extinction for us, and we had better grasp it, even if we have to read a few books and do some hard thinking. One angle I've talked about a lot recently, especially since September 11th, is the consequence for America of letting the Jews control our foreign policy. Another consequence of Jewish influence, which for me is far more important than anything Osama bin Laden could do to us, even if he had 100 nuclear bombs, is what the Jews have done to America racially. I've recommended this before, and I'll recommend it again. Go to a library or to your parents' or grandparents' attic and take a close look at the popular magazines that were published in America before the Second World War. Dig out 60-year-old issues of Look and Life and Time and the Saturday Evening Post. Look at the advertisements. Look at the photographs. Look at the image of America those magazines presented. It was a white America, an entirely white America. White children playing together or going to school together. White adults working together, partying together, celebrating together, relaxing together. It was a world that young white people could identify with. It was their world, and they could plan their future in it. That world has been destroyed. Our future has been destroyed, and I don't have to tell you who destroyed it. How can a white kid today identify with the multicultural world portrayed in today's advertisements? It's not just that there are so many more non-whites in America today. It's that the Jews have deliberately changed the image of what America should look like. They have remade the image to suit themselves, and now it doesn't suit us. I know that there are many white Americans, some on the Jews' payroll, and some merely lemmings saying what they think is expected of them, who will tell you that the multicultural image of the world presented to us today by the Jews is a much better image than the racist image of a white America we had before the Second World War. These are the idiots who will parrot whatever slogans the Jews have taught them. There is only one race, and that's the human race. Diversity is our strength, and all the other Jewish poison. But I know, and you know, that this Jewish multicultural image is not a better or healthier or more natural image. I know, and you know, that it is an image with which most white kids cannot identify, despite all of the politically correct chatter from the lemmings. That's why we have so many problems today with alienation and drug abuse and alcohol abuse, and aimlessness on the part of our young people. They don't see a future for themselves in the new world designed by the Jews, because it's not our kind of world. And this is a deliberate consequence of Jewish activity. Every perceptive person who examines the evidence objectively will understand that this is so. He will understand that it is not just America's foreign policy that has been perverted by the Jews. It is all of America's domestic policies as well. Jewish influence has not only led America to embrace an obscene creature like Ariel Sharon. Jewish influence also has white kids shuffling along the sidewalks of our cities in hip-hop attire with safety pins stuck through their lips listening to rap music. Jewish influence has white women walking along the sidewalks holding hands with black males or pushing baby carriages with mongrel abominations in them. And it is not just the Jewish moguls in Hollywood or on Madison Avenue who are exerting this influence. It is the Jewish presence as a whole. It is the entire Jewish tribe. Most of our people are still hypnotized by the Holocaust propaganda the Jews have been spewing at us for the past 50 years. Most of us feel guilty if we even question what the Jews are doing or why they're doing it. We need to break the grip of this propaganda so that we can defend ourselves. We need to understand why there was a Holocaust and what its true nature was. We need to look at the Holocausts perpetrated against our people by the Jews and their helpers before, during, and after the Second World War. We need to wake up and defend ourselves and we need to do it now. Thanks for being with me again today.